Hi, it's Dr. Weitz. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Private Medical Practice Academy. In my last episode, I talked to you about what to think about when considering how much space you need and how to lay it out. Now, let's build on that and think about what do you actually need to put in that space. Let's start with the entrance to the space. Now, depending, you may not have direct control of the common area. Just in case you need a refresher, the common area is the space outside of your actual office space. So in other words, your front door may not actually be directly on the street. You may have to walk into a building and there is some common space before you actually get to your individual business space. So the first thing you're going to want to make sure of is that you have very clear signage for your business. In the ideal world, the signage starts outside of the building, if at all possible. At minimum, it needs to be on the directory inside the front door. So let's say that your office is on the third floor of the building and it's down the hall. You would have a sign for your business outside the building. You would have your name on the directory inside the building. And then you should have signs along the way to your clinic, like when you get off the elevator at the third floor. And then, of course, you need to have your name on the door. You want to do everything humanly possible to help your patients not get lost and to have them show up on time. Clear signage can definitely help you with this. Now, as a brief aside, I would like to recommend to you that the ideal space is going to have two exits. Obviously, this is important from a safety perspective, like in the case of a fire or an earthquake. But it also helps if you're looking to come in or out without having to walk through your waiting room. The key here is to make sure that door is locked to the outside so that random people can't just walk into your space and wander around. You should also have a sign that says no entrance or private entrance so those same random people aren't knocking on the door trying to get in and therefore disrupt all of your clinic operations. Next, let's talk about your waiting room. Not only is this the first stop in somebody's journey through your practice, it's frequently the one where they end up hanging out the longest. And remember, it's not only patients that come in the front door. It's going to be the patient's family and friends, drug reps, device reps, other physicians who come by, or attorneys if you're doing medical legal work. Basically, anybody who comes to visit you, this is what they see. First impressions count. You want this room to be inviting. So for full disclosure, I am not an interior decorator. And I don't think you need to be. But you do want the decor of your waiting room to be both soothing and inviting. Now that said, decor is subjective and styles change year to year. You should really think twice before following the latest style. You really are going for the timeless look. You don't want your waiting room to look dated. You know, like when you walk in and you think, oh, this is so 1980s, think like big hair. You're not going to want to change your interior design more often than you have to just because it's no longer in style. You're going to want colors that are cheerful, natural, and inviting. Usually warm paint tones are a good choice. You can choose wallpaper, but there are a couple of issues you're going to want to think about. First, wallpaper is more likely to look dated. Second, you need to have washable wallpaper, so when something gets on the wallpaper, you can actually just wipe it off. And then finally, the reason I'm personally not a fan of wallpaper, it's hard to touch up. When someone runs into the wall and then there's a mark on the wall, if you have paint, it's very easy to touch it up. On the other hand, if there's a mark on the wallpaper or there's a tear, that's a much bigger deal to fix. Next, you're going to want to think about sound absorption when choosing some of the accessories for your waiting room. Things like carpet, drapes, upholstered furniture, and acoustic ceiling tiles all can help maximize sound absorption and result in a quieter waiting room. Now, you may not think this is a big issue when you're first starting out, but I can tell you firsthand that as you grow and there are more and more people coming into your waiting room, the noise can be a significant factor. Your first priority when designing your waiting room should be comfort. You want to have sufficient seating capacity, but it's important not to overcrowd your space. People really don't like that feeling of being in a sardine can or on a stuffed New York City subway. When selecting furniture, you're going to be best off choosing individual chairs. People tend to be reluctant to share a couch. So unless you have two people who come together, the couches waste valuable seating space because usually only one person is going to sit on them. You're going to want to purchase some armless chairs in order to accommodate people who are pregnant, obese, or disabled. Sit in the chair and see how easy it is to get up. If the seating is too deep or too low, then people are going to have a hard time getting up and out of the chair. And then guess what happens? They're either going to need help from your staff or from somebody else, or they're going to fall, in which case you're going to have a problem. So you need to think about seating in the context of who's going to be in your waiting room, how functional they are, and what are their accessibility needs. You want furniture that is durable, stain-resistant, and washable. If you're first starting out and using cheap office furniture with vinyl seats and metal legs like I did, then this is not a big concern. But that initial startup phase is not going to last very long, and you're going to actually need real furniture. So let's get back to thinking about who is actually going to be in your waiting room and who is going to use your real furniture. So one of my first recommendations is to avoid getting chairs that have wooden legs. Why? Because they look banged up and worn very quickly, especially if you have a lot of kids or folks who are in wheelchairs and scooters who then run into your chairs. You'll need to choose fabrics for the seat coverings. And ideally, these should be real fabric, not the vinyl crap that looks cheap, is cold, and that people stick to. However, you want fabric that will hold up. People bring food and drinks to appointments. And yeah, sure, you may have a sign that says no food or drink, but you and your staff are not the furniture police, and you have better things to do than spend time monitoring this. And I will tell you firsthand that even with a policy, people still do it. And then to bring up the stuff that nobody ever wants to talk about, people are incontinent and they make a mess on your chairs. Or they arrive sick and they vomit. Having washable, stain-resistant fabric goes a long way to dealing with these messes. And I'll tell you that one of the best investments I made was having FiberSeal treat the fabric on the seating in the waiting room and the exam rooms. In addition to the initial treatment, they came quarterly to retreat, and after 12 years, with 600 or more guests moving through our waiting room every day, the fabric still looked new. If your patients typically wait more than a few minutes before you call them back to an exam room, you're going to want to provide up-to-date educational or entertaining reading material. If you have this material out on little tables, make sure that someone keeps it neat and that those materials don't end up on the chairs, because this takes up space that somebody could be sitting in and it looks messy. Also, let me tell you that patients will complain if all you have in your waiting room are magazines from 3 years ago. Believe it or not, it's the trivial stuff that actually makes an impression on people. I also want you to know that you can get medical TV services that are either free or low cost for your waiting room. You can use these to broadcast educational information, and you can use it as a marketing tool. Many of these will allow you to actually upload your own videos marketing your services. I also want to point out to you that medical TV services are less controversial than regular TV. With regular TV, there's always somebody who's offended by what's on, and there's always somebody else who wants to change the channel and play with the remote or is bothering your staff about some show that's on. But here's the caveat. You need to know how long the average wait time is in your waiting room and make sure that the loop of videos is longer than that. You don't want people using the medical TV as a marker of how long they've been waiting, so make sure they don't see the same clip twice. Here's another example of little things that matter. You want to make sure that you have cellophane wrappers for umbrellas. That way, when people come in from the rain or the snow, they put their umbrella in the wrapper rather than drip all over your waiting room. Aside from the mess, it's going to help you prevent potential slip and falls. Moving from front to back, I want to say a quick word about your front desk. More likely than not, you will have built-ins as the desk space and cabinets for your front desk. You want to actually sit at the desk and figure out the ergonomics. You're going to want to figure out what type of chair you need. To start with, you'll want one with adjustable height. Second, you want to avoid arms on the chair because, depending on the height, it may or may not fit under the desk. And if that happens, your staff member can't get close enough to the desk, and then their back hurts, and then all of a sudden, you have a workman's comp claim. Think about the layout of where you're going to put things like the phone, the scanner, the copier, and your fax machine. You want your staff to be able to answer the phone, greet the patient, copy the insurance card, and process the credit card, all without having to get up. I promise you that this is going to help their productivity. Every time they have to get up to get something or to do something, that basically is wasted time. You want the computer screen at the front desk to be at eye level and so that the person is sitting with their arms and wrists in a neutral position. Again, you don't want a workman's comp claim for carpal tunnel because of the ergonomics of your setup. And while you may think I'm joking, let me assure you that I'm 10,000% serious and that this actually happens. Now let's turn our attention to your exam rooms and what's in them. I'll start with the exam table. For some specialties, the exam table is an essential part of the room and your patients will spend the majority of their visit on the exam table. But I also understand that for other specialties, the exam table is used occasionally at most. There is a wide variety of exam tables available, both new and used. You can decide what you want based on your budget, the procedures you perform, and your patient population. But there are two things that you absolutely need to consider. Those are comfort and how easy is it to adjust that table. There are some exam tables that are fully motorized, and these will allow you to adjust the height, the foot, and the back. They can tilt into Trendelenburg. They can do a pelvic tilt. There are all sorts of options. But the thing I want you to hear from me is that tables that are readily adjustable decrease your chance of back injury from lifting the patient onto the table or bending over to do the exam. So for example, a table that can lower to 18 inches from the floor makes it easier for a pregnant patient, a post-op patient, or somebody who's disabled to get on and off of the table without putting excess strain on themselves, you, or your staff. And while adjustable beds obviously cost more, the incremental cost difference may pale in comparison to a patient lawsuit or a workman's comp claim. So my comments are not meant to be Debbie Downer-ish. They are really meant for you to think about your own patient population and how you use the exam table when you're figuring out where to spend your budget dollars. You'll need to have two side chairs, one for the patient and another for a relative or a guest. And then you'll want to have an adjustable stool for yourself. And just in case you're wondering why it needs to be adjustable, let me suggest to you that if your MA is a different height than you are, or you share your exam room with anybody else, the stool height is going to go up and down. And ideally, you get a stool with an airlift feature because it will go up and down without jolting your spine. Let me tell you firsthand, it really helps. It's also easier to adjust on the fly as compared to having to stand there and twist the seat. Next, I want to talk about cabinets. If you have to install your own cabinets, you should consider modular cabinetry. There are a couple of reasons why, including the fact that you can choose the amount of storage space that you actually need, and it's easier to take with you if you're going to move. You may also choose to put in 18-inch deep cabinets rather than the typical kitchen cabinet depth of 24 inches. This way you get the storage space, but don't take up the foot room. You're going to want to put in cabinets that are durable, easy to clean both inside and out, and made with medical-grade materials. Most cabinets made for healthcare facilities use plastic and steel. Depending on your specialty, you may want to have diagnostic equipment in the room. If you're going to mount equipment in the room, mount it in the same place in each exam room so you and your staff don't need to adjust your routine every time you go into a different room. There are a couple of disadvantages to putting equipment in each room. The first is obviously cost because you have duplication of equipment. The second, however, is that your patients are going to play with the equipment when you're not in the room. Which brings me to the one piece of equipment that basically now every single office is going to have, and that is an EMR. So one of the biggest issues for an exam room is thinking about how are you going to access your EMR. Surprisingly, desktop computers or monitors are still more popular than laptops and tablets. So if you're going to use a desktop computer or a monitor, they're best positioned on a desk or a desk height extension of a counter. And obviously, it needs to be near an electrical outlet and away from the sink. But realistically, you really don't need a desktop computer in each room. Realistically, all you need is a monitor that connects either to your server, if your EMR is server-based, or to the internet if it's cloud-based. But a couple of things about leaving a desktop monitor in the room. First, there is always the HIPAA concern. You and your staff have to be extremely vigilant to sign out after each encounter so that your guests cannot go surfing. Failure to sign out is a sure way to have a breach. Second, whether it's because the patient is disgruntled or bored or you have some unruly kid, there is always the possibility that somebody is going to deface the monitor. As an alternative, you can use a tablet or a laptop that you bring from room to room. This can eliminate those issues and it can actually decrease your equipment costs. Two major things you need to think about if you're going to take a tablet or laptop from room to room are the ergonomics of where you're going to place it when you come into the room. And the second is to make sure that you have a battery supply or an electrical outlet, since more likely than not, the device is going to need to be recharged at some point during your day. You even need to think about little things like waste receptacles. The waste receptacle should have a foot-operated lid and be seamless so that it can keep the garbage inside the can itself. You need to think about who's going to be emptying the garbage and how often. Think about how gross it is if you open the garbage can for a different patient and the garbage is still full. You're also going to want to think about whether you're going to use one container or you're going to separate out the biohazardous material. Let me give you a clue. It depends on how much you have of each, especially since getting rid of the biohazardous stuff is more expensive. You need to think about where you're going to put your sharps containers. You want them to be easily accessible. The last thing you want to do is be wandering around the room with the sharps in your hand because the box is not anywhere near you. And then you're going to want to think about, are you going to use linens? So you can use paper sheets and paper gowns, or you can use linens. If you use linens, then you have to think about where you're going to keep the clean linens. How are you going to change them? Where are you going to store the dirty ones? On the other hand, if you use all paper, you need to figure out the costs associated with that, and then figure out where you're going to store them, and then how are you going to manage the disposal of them. Next, you'll probably want to have a break room so that your staff can have lunch or take a break. And you'll probably want to outfit this room with a table, chairs, microwave, coffee maker, and a fridge. The break room incentivizes your staff to stay on site rather than to leave, which is really important in helping them to be back on time from lunch. You can even use this as a meeting room if you have to meet with drug reps or device reps. And it gives you a place to duck in, especially if you don't have an office. You may need a room for your billing staff. I would recommend that you use an open space and use desks to create a workspace for them. That way you can repurpose or reconfigure the space as needed. And if you're responsible for the build-out, let me tell you that open space is less expensive than rooms. Think of it this way. Every wall you put up or every wall that you move costs money. And then, last but not least, there's your office. While I don't absolutely think you need one, you may want one. So if you decide to have an office, that's the one room that you get to decorate as you see fit. Thanks for joining me. Be sure to sign up for my newsletter below, and I'll be sending you tips on how to start your practice, best run your practice, grow the practice, and then ultimately be able to leverage your medical practice into multiple other businesses. I hope to see you soon.